Welcome, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey, as we dive into June and approach the summer solstice and many things before us that we want to honor, and always all of our teachings to tease into pertinence. So last week we hosted Gary Lachman, author of Dark Star Rising, you know, Magic and Power in the Era of Trump, which I think is invaluable information, just that, you know, the Dementors of Doom are largely esoterically trained, and he calls, you know, Trump and the ilk around, you know, chaos magicians, that, of course, long tradition of, you know, not caring about truth. No, truth is irrelevant, and just shock. So, you know, and of course, I'm just back from the UAC, the United Astrology Congress, full of much adorableness and scholarship, and of course, many teasing into pertinence, but many in which I would say, let's tease it into pertinence. So more than perfectly, we host today one of my favorite astro-mytho-consciousness dance partners, Daniel Jamario, who's joining us from Metro Manila, that we can dive into, put everything of substance on our work table. Welcome, Daniel.
Hey, hi, Carolyn. And just to be clear about something, we're not in Metro Manila, outside of it, thank God. I mean, it's not much fun in Metro Manila. So we're we're up on the hill looking down on it.
Very excellent. Good. Well, bless your heart and filing scouting reports too. Yes, much before the council. I did like, and briefly, I will have Rick Tarnas on radio, but I liked at UAC, United Astrology Congress, just briefly, you know, his little diagram of the circle with the self, little human self, with permeable little dots, and that's where we're embedded, and animistic kinship, and magic participation, and then he goes, and then we go to pyramids, right, the archaic, and the pyramid, which is the priest thing, and, you know, up there, and then we go to double pyramids, the medieval period of the king and the pope, and then we get to the, you know, the modern realm, but still at that point, man is the most important. And Tarnas says, you know, the Michelangelo image of God's finger touching Adam's figure, going, that's the download moment. There we go. That's the download moment. Humans, rah, rah. You know, and then we get to the modern embrace of this world, and it's not predetermined, and we throw out all this superstitious nonsense, but we're alone, we're isolated because we're all important, and disenchanting. And then we get into the postmodern. That was last week's show, where it's all chaos. And to toss back to you, and now we want to return to the wisdom of animism, but with the full cuckoo humanistic journey behind us, right? Does that make sense to you?
It's completely in alignment with what was happening when I got started in astrology in 1970 with the Rogerian school. And this whole approach started with looking at the whole process as a dialectic. So you'd have the thesis up until around 600 BC when Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto were conjunct in Taurus, where everything was a clan, tribe, there was no individual consciousness. And then somewhere around that time, even individual horoscopes started to appear. You know, the invention of something that's more personal, person-centered, as it were, individual. And so that has reached its limit. And Rajar said, okay, that was the thesis. The antithesis is the development of individual emphasis, even including individual enlightenment. But now it was absolutely necessary to create a synthesis, which was what he called the planetarization of consciousness, which is basically bringing that, we could call it an advance, the development of individual consciousness, but bringing it back into the globe, into the whole, all of humanity, and including the whole planet and the noosphere and you know, the biosphere and everything. And so that, I think that's exactly the stage we have to put our attention on right now, because the individualism thing has gone too far.
Right. Well, just to bring up what I always bring up, but I have not tired my enthusiasm of it. You know, the Mabinogian old stories collected in 10th century. You know, they're pitch. I mean, all the myths. We'll get to Jupiter trine Neptune. All the myths, all the stories that ever were or will be are here now. Here they are. You know, everything's rooting for the rogue species, you know, to rejoin the choreography of creation. so the Mabinogion, you know, the elders gather at dark of moon, as we often do, and say, oh no, the men have found out they have something to do with children, and things were going so well before then, but we can see what's going to happen. Women and children will become property, and humans will journey forth on their individual journey and lose kinship, not only with each other, but with nature herself, until the earth might die. And then, at that point, some humans, here we go, team, will keep all the value of their individual journey, we're saying this because it's useful, over and over again, and rejoin once again into the kind of animistic participation. So, yeah, exactly. So
when I was taking my training with different shamans back in the 80s, they would always tell the Native American version of it, which is when the humans left the circle of animals and how the animals were so sad that the human left. And then the whole story is, when will the human return to the circle of animals? And there's the whole thing about coyote in there too. You've probably heard this part of the story.
Well, I don't know. I'm always keen for coyote. We're coming up on the anniversary of Stella Coyote's death.
The way they tell the story is that Coyote, who is not in the original circle of animal brothers, he notices human has left. And so he says, here's my chance. So he takes human's place.
Ah, well, would that were true.
And he says, oh my God, what have I done? Because now he realizes that he's taking on everything humans had been taking on, but now have left. You know, so he's now in a place where he has to be both.
Well, it ties in with two things I've been ruminating on for quite a while, which is, you know, a guest on a show on coyotes, but he'd mentioned that 4,000 years ago, the Greeks got rid of all their animal deities and replaced them with humans. And part of me, having been to India in January and trying to kind of spruce up on my once knowledgeable realm there, rereading the Upanishads and stuff, and I was disrespectfully impatient because I go, Upanishads, brilliant, yes, but very humans, rah rah, humans absolutely is the flower of creation, and I'm just really not there now. Humans not my favorite species necessarily, and men, you can go to Mars, but not till you've cleaned your room and made sure that the wolves are safe. You know, it's like, come on, it's not just, you know, to throw the hubris of humanism into the cauldron and ladle out the truth of animism of, you know, equal respect. So yeah, that's kind of like the humans leaving the animal circle, and we want to kind of bring that back. But it is an important. Oh well, yeah. Anything, anywhere you want to go, Daniel.
Oh no! I just want to say, you know, you probably know people like Prechtel and David Abram. Their view is that human beings are only human beings because of the contribution that came from different animals. You know, that we basically owe our humanness to wolves, to eagles, to crows, and so on. And if we then end up becoming as Dyson wants us to become, which is a post-Darwinism, that we're going to be a mono species, that all we will have are other humans and our technologies, then basically human beings are finished. Because who we are is the combination of the input that's come from lions and eagles and so on. So without that, we lose our footing as to what an authentic human being actually can be.
No, I'm all for that. We would be nothing without them, because we do want to ponder these sort of big essential things, like what is unique to our species aside from our rudeness, you know, and trampling all over complexity. And I think it might be really what you're saying, you know, our capacity to borrow biomimicry, right. Here we go, to borrow qualities of intelligence from our flora and fauna kin.
Yes.
Yeah. And that model, which is not humanism, rah-rah, although, as the Mabinogion says, you know, there will be those humans who keep all the value of their individual journey. We like our uniqueness, you know, which might not have been completely honored in early tribal thing, right? I mean, so we want to, you know, blend all this. We keep all the value of our unique journey and join back into telepathic kinship. So it's perfect, kind of.
Right.
Yeah, but so here we are, you know, the two things I've been kind of concentrating on, and you know, absolutely, I want to turn to you for your lucid narrative about the Mars cycle, Mars in Aquarius, the many things that we have before us. But Uranus in Taurus, we know the shadow is the last time in the 1930s, you know, Hitler's election, Uranus was right on his son, in Europe, fascism, in America, the New Deal, which now the Dementors would like to completely destroy. Because what's important about, you know, Lachman's work and what we kind of know, and the Mercer in Aries and all, is a complete and utter contempt for those they deem weak, right? It's Ayn Rand. It's, you know, it's like, you know, I've got mine. So
social Darwinism.
Yeah, it is social Darwinism. So there's that. So there's the shadow thing, but what's different now is, you know, it's Ollie income free to, you know, all beings, all dedicated listening participants everywhere in the memosphere, you know, to come back to inhale, insource what we've outsourced, our definition of wise leadership, our powers of imagination, you know, and also, I think in the 1930s in Germany, there was a huge renaissance of yoga and channeling and, oh, probably Pilates if it had been invented then, but, and astrology and stuff, but completely oblivious to what was brewing around it, detached, going, oh, yeah. No, politics isn't spiritual. And it's like, no, it's a new form of being alert and participatory and weaving and cooperating with larger forces than just humans to dream better world into being. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, I'm with you.
So Mars cycle. Okay, so it's kind of intriguing that Uranus and Saturn, the two what used to be called rulers, I want to throw rulers out, but I'll keep them for a moment, of Aquarius. So it says, well, you know, best time ever to be Aquarius, in a sense. The two rulers are trined. Aquarians often going, oh, I'm ahead of time or behind time. It's like, no, it's the perfect time. Just as when we get to Jupiter and Neptune, the two rulers of Pisces. Best time ever to be a Pisces. No more need for, you know, what Steve Ehrman calls a yearning disability, you know, too much melancholy, just the right amount of melancholy. But, you know, it's the time now to return from exile, the mythic return, you know, the return of King Arthur, the return going, all the income free, everybody come on in. So yes, do feel free to guide us about the new Mars cycle.
One of the things I've been most fascinated in is these so-called synodic cycles of the inner planets. And we can put our attention on Venus and Mars. It's like a way of taking the position of Venus or Mars by sign and placing it into a larger story. And it takes about 26 months for Mars to go through all of its different phases. And so that means that for any given 26-month time period, there will be a dominant archetype, a dominant expression of archetypal masculine for both men and women that will be the theme of that 26-month time period. Mars just entered into Aquarius on May 15th, and it will reach what is called opposition when it's opposite the sun, and that also means that it's brightest, closest, retrograde. It's a very important portion in the whole Mars cycle, and it'll be the sign of Aquarius that they're dealing with. They're actually, Mars will be in Aquarius, except for a very short period when it goes back a little bit into Capricorn. From May 15th to November 15th, about 6 months, sometimes during this phase of Mars's cycle, it might spend as much as 7 or 8 months in the sign that then becomes the dominant image for the whole time frame. And this time it's Aquarius. This is one of the rarer ones for Mars to have as its dominant flavor. It happened in 1892. It happened in 1971. It's happening now in 2018, and won't happen again until 2050. So when you have archetypal masculine having as its dominant theme Aquarius, then we have to look at, you know, what is the intent of this, and also what is the shadow of it. And I'm putting a whole lot of attention on this. I've been looking through all these charts of individuals that are just heavily into believing that technology can save us. And the other thing, interestingly, Caroline, is that it was in the same time period when Uranus was in Taurus before, is that that's when the rise of the first works about technocracy. The problem is that they could not actually implement it then because they didn't have the technology to implement what they wanted to do, which we do have now, which is literally to track everything and using statistics and using personal information and using everything that the technical mind can do in order to, maybe idealistically on some level, to engineer a culture. What could possibly go wrong? because it depends on who's in charge of the information, and how it's some technical elite, how they want to maybe guide the whole planet. I see it as an ideal of Aquarius to be able to do that, but they're missing the shadow of it. The shadow of it, which is a disconnect from what we've been talking about already, our shamanic and animistic souls, the connection to the earth itself, a disconnect from carbon reality and elevating truly just only the digital and the silicon world. Probably the leading figure in this in the world today, born in 1971, Mars in Aquarius, is Elon Musk, who basically is the one who in cahoots with the NSA is going to be putting in, you know, the thousands of satellites so the entire earth is connected to 5G. You know, who do you remember voting on that? I mean, I certainly don't.
I don't think we've heard from the wolves on that either, or the migrating birds, or the and let me just insert colleague Sir Herbert Reid, great British philosophical anarchist. Only those serving an apprenticeship to nature can be trusted with technology. It's just tattoo on our forearm.
Yeah, and in shamanic astrology, we have our version of that, which is that unless a person knows the direct experience with the night sky, then how can you be an astrologer? You know, it's sort of like having that neo-Luddite view that it's fine to use technology, but first if you have an apprenticeship with nature. And anyway, so I'm just calling out here the shadow of the masculine Aquarian goal, which is, technology can save us. We can maybe, you know, Kurzweil is another good example of this. You know, he basically says by 2029 that we'll have the capacity to download human consciousness into a computer chip, and then we'll live forever. That's the ultimate vanity of an Aquarian ego.
Yes. Right. No, it is a shadowy thing, which is that, as we know, all in this beautiful language, you know, we all have demons that and virtues, and they're quite related, and we earn the virtues by dancing with the demons. So a virtue and a demon of Aquarius is detachment.
Yeah.
Being able to look like, oh, look, my former boyfriend is trashing my apartment. How interesting. Okay. It can be detached or bodhisattva or Kuan Yin detachment, you know, in nama 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 nama, but with one foot forward. But I'd say, you know, the Elon, you know, whatever that you're bringing up, the ultimate detachment is the boys are leaving the planet. And we go, no, that's like Shane, right? That's the cowboy myth, you know, leaving gum wrappers in their wake and everything. Shane, come back. You know, so that's too much detachment going, no, you know, just the right amount there. It's kind of like the Saturn Uranus, biography of world history going structure, too much structure, wild revolution, too much revolution, not paying the bills. Kind of like the history of Pacifica too, you know, da, 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 and, you know, there we go. And we want to bring it in so it's not so wobbly on the edges and reactive into this, you know, dance, like standing on one foot is a Saturn Uranus stable movement, kind of a dynamic, well, our balance.
It also very much reminds me of Zeus's warning to Prometheus, you know, which is, okay, this is cool. You stole fire. Now you've got it. But I must warn you about two things. Hubris, believing you, in fact, are now a god, right? And number two, that you're going to forget about justice.
Ah.
That was Zeus's warning to Prometheus once he got the fire. And to me, I mean, as you know, Uranus almost was named Prometheus. And there are plenty of astrologers out there, a lot of them in Europe, that still wish that it had been named Prometheus.
Well, we love Rick Tarnas's early essay on Uranus as Prometheus, just as the, at least it moved it, because it doesn't quite fit the Uranus model, but, you know, as the liberator. I like looking at the glyph, little H with a circle drop below it, as like an archaic jail key, that it is intrinsically, you know, nature's evolutionary, experimental, and liberating genius that, you know, we associate with, you know, coyote and raven and seeds that sprout after cataclysm and all of those things. So yes, back to the Mars stationing at 9 Aquarius. I have the summer solstice chart here. For those lucky enough to be in Washington, D.C. on Friday, June 22nd, I will be giving my solstice thing. You can find out about that at coyotenewarknews.com. But Mars that night will be at its stationing degree, 9 plus Aquarius. And I do like the Sabian, there we go, for that degree. A man who had for a time become the embodiment of a popular ideal is made to realize that as a person, he is no longer and never was this ideal. Yes. Okay. Let's go. There's an image we can all get behind, going, being generously proffered to us. And it's kind of, you know, Mars conjunct the South Node, which I like, an ally is reframed, because people and even astrologers heap all kinds of superstitious nonsense and all kinds of like things. But a friend says, you know, think of the South Node of the Moon, North and South Nodes, where the Moon crosses the Sun's path. The South Node is magic backpack, you know, kind of where you're coming from and taking it towards the North. So Mars conjunct the South Node, you know, and the South Node at the cosmic egg, the Renaissance, going, yeah, positive yang from the past, you know. And in Aquarius, you know, I think one beautiful model of positive yang is the Arthurian round table, very Aquarius, comprised of shining, radiant, equal individuals as an experiment to bring kind of spiritually, magically adept people into governance to protect life. And then
I think there's a lot of Libra in it also, I think.
Oh, okay, sure.
It's the ideal of conscious equal partnerships.
Yes. Well, yeah. Okay, let's go with that. So the Mars stationing on the summer solstice, and then it, you know, retrogrades, and you said it retrogrades June 26th, right? When its stations appears to stand still in the sky.
Where's my notes,
yes,
on that?
Right.
The retrograde point is on the 26th of June.
Right. Yeah, and right before the full moon. At 6 plus Capricorn, which is fun, because that is a kind of over-the-top Sabian, but we'll take it. The Sabian is a heavily veiled hierophant, you know, seized by the divine, leads a powerful ritual. Now we're back to kind of circle one in a way, but we go, right, tribal shamanism. Although, let's go back to shadow. Well, you know, I'm so interested in all of us being willing to throw into Pluto's cauldron our species' addiction to having an enemy, because it's such a con. And remember, the Dementors of Doom, they thrive on conflict. You know, and it's a shaman shadow, too. You know, there are many good shamans, you know, sometimes lacking in humor. It's different than a trickster thing. But there is a kind of addiction to, like, I am a shaman, and therefore these people are out to get me. It's like, oh, stop. You know, we don't have time for that. It's old-fashioned. And
there's the other one that's old-fashioned about that, which is, you know, I am first shaman, and it's because of my power that these things happened, you know, rather than the fact you've simply been borrowing it from universal will, you know. And that's definitely a scorpionic shadow. But you were bringing up Sabian symbols, I wanted to mention that the key degree for the entire 26-month Mars cycle is for something, you know, so it's the fifth degree. And I think you shared that when we were talking off air beforehand. You want to bring that in?
Yeah, I do. I love that degree. I mean, we all have favorite degrees, but Mars at 4 plus Aquarius, its image is the council of ancestors, a young leader listens to their voices. And once again, let's throw it open, team. So it's not just human ancestors. It's the guiding DNA and plants and animals and creatures. Those, the whole community. I think, you know, part of the Aquarius, you know, community, not just humans, not just human community. And the, and that's part of Uranus and Taurus going the definition of community in the largest sense possible, the water and the beings and all the little plants in this, and for us to be humbled by, you know, so many wonderful guests, well, humans in the world, but also guests that I've hosted on the Visionary Activist Show throughout the years, Stephen Buhner, you know, humbling us by informing us of the incredibly, even witty and altruistic intelligence of trees that, you know, if they're being nibbled on by a beetle, you know, they'll put up with it for a while, but when it crosses that limit, that Saturn thing, it goes, ah, that's it. And the tree starts manufacturing the pheromone of the predator of that beetle. And it also puts out a public service announcement to other trees going, you know, rude beetles coming, start manufacturing your pheromones now. So, yeah, I mean, it is all of this large. Well, see, I've thought Uranus and Taurus, you know, is like, you know, Gaia herself not waiting for humans. Here we go. And that brings us also to so many of our friends on the Big Island of Hawaii. Mm-hmm. You know, that I mean, I'm tossing it to you.
Yeah, I've been following it a lot because of having lived there for so many years and people that are in that vicinity. And the thing that's most moving to me is when they're interviewing the different people that are having their homes inundated, and all of Lower Puna has now been evacuated. This is just a massive lava flow. Basically they're interviewing these folks, and basically their attitude with tears, but is also with humility, which is like, we knew when we came here, she was in charge. You know, and it is very humbling because there's nothing that modern technology can do to stop that force once it starts. To me, I can't help but watch and see as that happens, and it's going right over the same area that was inundated in 1960, actually, you know, where they built on top of it, and now they're being evacuated from the same area. We were there in an area that we did an event way back at the 1991 total eclipse at a place that's now been shut down. Because it's fortunately, it's a little bit upslope from where the lava is coming down now, so it's not being inundated, but it's closed down because it's cut off.
Well, it is something in the realm of democratic animism, because when I first went to the Big Island and I was embraced by Pauahi, Native Hawaiian there, who took me to many great places and told me many great stories and demonstrated some things, that when there was a bad power plant that was going to destroy virgin rainforest was planned, the, you know, indigenous people got together and they invited Pele to express herself. And every time that a cornerstone was laid for this bad project, you know, lava would erupt, and the scientists were puzzled, going, this shouldn't happen according to our studies, you know. And on the third time, they were like, we'll just tiptoe away. But I think what it is...
Funny you bring that up, because Caroline, the woman, a cultural practitioner who married Lynn and I on the Big Island, Auntie Linda, when this first started happening, she said, well, of course it's happening, because basically the Puna geothermal plant is completely shut down and some of the wells are already covered. The entire geothermal plant is in the path of the lava.
Well,
she said that's exactly what was happening. That's reason. Her view, of course, is that we warned them, and here it is.
Well, right. And I think it's just something to put, you know, on our speculative altar, going, we humans, we can invite the gods or the forces or the living intelligence of elements and plants, and, you know, but we can't really tell them when to stop. That's quite enough. So it is a huge thing, and inviting. But I do think this is the way to go: experiment with partnering, and the completely kind of acceptable to all scientific rational beings. Embodiment of this is biomimicry and, you know, the work of Janine Benyus, may she be praised forever. You know, rather than looting nature, why don't we borrow nature's recipes? Because that's just universally appealing. It's so elegant and beautiful. I don't know any, you know, anyone from any spectrum of the political realm, and we do want to dissolve these artificial, imposed by the reality police, you know, barriers to finding a unifying story. And I don't know anybody who isn't moved by, you know, when Janine and other biomimicry people say, here's a problem and here's an elegant solution. Look at that. And it's like, oh, that's so beautiful. And it moves us deeply. And so this, you know, against all odds, but the only way to go, necessary renaissance of humans humbly cooperating with nature's guiding genius and aesthetic as well. So that's, you know, it's like cake or death. Take your pick. There we go. Let's think about it. And then again, without unnecessarily ticking people off, but it is useful for us. We're all backstage together here. You know, what Tarnas was also reminding us that we're in accord with too, which is, you know, the Abrahamic divine is completely transcendent of the world, right? With a special relationship to humans. Liberating teachings of Jesus, not so much, not that way, but the Abrahamic divine, humans, rah, rah, it's that chosen thing again, chosen people, chosen species. And yeah. I think that's another one to throw into the cauldron. You know, and all of its sneaky spiritual colonialism variants, you know, we are the special people who are awake, but it's like, no, that's the same Abrahamic nonsense, you know, of chosen, special. It's like, no. So to not be too grumpy, I pull out my Hermitude composter. And so the vision, you know, I do like the wolf-oti, the wolf-coyote mating model of to have and contribute to a supportive pack that encourages, which is very wolfy, it encourages everybody's kind of mad, unique genius. And we go, I like that model. I think that's a wonderful model. So, So Mars in Aquarius, South Node, you know, I think it's also like Return of King Arthur, you know, all the myths say, you know, Haijon the Conqueror in the South, the great trickster redeemer of the South, it said he did not die. He went to go live in Haijon the Conqueror root to await the world's call at a time of danger. King Arthur did not die, goes to Avalon, you know, to await the world's call. And you know, don't you think it's time to, you know, grab a trumpet and go now?
Well, that's exactly what we're trying to invoke and be in harmony with them and everything our school does, that particular ideal. Can I go back for a moment to May 15th and then look ahead to July 26th?
Yes, please.
Yeah, so I noticed that on May 15th, Mars into Aquarius, Uranus square Taurus. I mean, I'm sorry, Uranus into Taurus. So there, and those two are in square to each other.
And a new moon.
Yes. And then on July 26th, the full moon for Aquarius 45, earlier that day, Sun opposing Mars, Sun square Uranus the next day. And if you look at the full moon on that day, which is the Vision Quest full moon, there's Mars conjunct the moon 2 hours previously to that. It's such an incredible signature that, which I think the May 15th thing is leading us up to, because that's Sun square Uranus, moon conjunct Mars, Sun opposing Mars, and it's bringing into full force this dynamic relationship between archetypal masculine for men and women moving into Aquarius, and then Uranus, which does of course have a relationship with Uranus, moving into Taurus. And to me, the Uranian movement into Taurus is to remind us of the animistic and shamanic connection. And actually, if we say that on a more ordinary way of describing it, since part of Taurus historically has been about values. It's a revolution of our values. And to make certain that it's not just the technocrat's dream, which is the complete, overdoing what the whole point of the scientific revolution was, which was to completely glorify objective awareness, which is like the female shadow of Aquarius. It's all love and light, a refusal to recognize anything that which we could call a shadow. I can remember back in the 70s when, Aquarius was the glamour sign, and everybody would say, oh yeah, Aquarius is great, and I had to come up with some Aquarius jokes, like what is the shadow of Aquarius? Well, the shadow is Aquarius is that there is no shadow. why does Aquarius all believe in unconditional love? Well, because it's a good idea.
I remember that one.
A fine way to get there, but it's leaving out the organic earth water connections that human beings started with.
Right, I want to come back to the Aquarius thing, but just a little, July 26, which you highlight is intriguing, and Mars at 4 plus Aquarius and opposite the Sun, and we'll get to see the waxing Moon right next to Mars, which is great. So that's Carl Jung's birthday. I like that, as well as George Bernard Shaw and Mick Jagger's birthday. So there you have it for astrology. But I also like Rick Tarnas, mentioning that when we have the animistic world, the primal embedded participatory, and then the archaic priesthood thing, and then the modern stuff, that the Jungian intervention, he said, was huge in bridging this, which we do want to do homage, and since it is Jung's birthday on July 26th, going, thank you, Carl, for being a fantastic secondary source, for starters, going, oh, humans, you should look at this, and look at alchemy, and read these things, and look at that. So, I mean, he really was... it annoys the Jungians, which is why it's fun to do. But to say he was a fantastic secondary source and a good pioneer, and the Jungian intervention in guiding humans past the modern me, self, is that deserves we'll give him
well. And being given that he's the author or the inspirer of our understandings around synchronicity, the fact that he would shoot that would be his birthday during this incredibly dramatic thing happening at the Vision Quest full moon with Mars at its brightest and closest is the beginning of this 26 month time frame. It's pretty remarkable. Thank you, Jung.
Thank you, Carl. With Mars, I like thinking of planets appearing to move backwards, retrograde motion, compelling illusion. But as they're going on a vision quest to retrieve, and so I think positive, and we can keep honoring the shadow too. But a positive masculine dynamic that many wonderful men that I've met lately have been to the underworld, and they have earned the right, of what I call strong enough to be gentle. So they have the credibility, they've gone to the underworld, they've maybe done bad things, but they've come back, and that quality of redemption and strong enough to be gentle, I think is a Mars Aquarius kind of dynamic, regardless of our extremely temporary age, race, and gender assignment. But that men carry, quite a lot, going strong enough to be gentle. And there was a tough guy, in Baja wondering, like, whoa, what's my next tattoo? And I go, how about tattooing strong enough to be gentle on your arm? He's like, I'm going to do that. I go, okay, excellent. Strong enough to be gentle. It's a bumper sticker. No, actually, it might attract violence. So the calling back, and then I know there are things that you wanted to get to as well. Jupiter in Scorpio on the scales, you said, and I love the Jupiter Neptune dynamic. But wherever you want to go with Jupiter retrograde, now retrograde in Scorpio.
Yeah, there's a place in the sky. This is like when you make a relationship between the sign and the constellation. So there's two stars that are the scales of the constellation called Libra, and it's 15 degree Scorpio. And there's been three times in this Jupiter transit through Scorpio that it went through the scales. It's now backing up. And then at 13, it's making another dash through the scales. And this particular area of the sky is the same scales that was the inspiration for the Egyptian, weighing on the scales, trying to get the heart and the feather to be the same weight.
No, not the same. That was a dodgy thing. Your heart must be lighter than a feather, or Nom Nom will eat it and you'll be plunged into dark oblivion.
Are you sure? Because one of our students, Gemini Brett, he basically did this whole thing. He may not be accurate. I haven't done the original research myself. That he went back and looked at some of the sources, and that it was to be equal, because you would fail the test if it was lighter or heavier. So
no,
anyway,
I have the print on my wall right here, and the tour to Egypt. So I'll take on Gemini Brett, but I think
I'm not, as I say, it's not my own. I was just sharing
with all this. No, I like it. Mythic game show Dharma combat. But I'm holding to lighter than a feather. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. Because the way the Egyptians taught me, and I have the image from the oldest, and it's a duplication, but the oldest image is that it really wants to be lighter, which sort of makes sense.
So that would refer to then, if in the old imagery about when a planet goes through the sun, the moon, or a planet goes through the scales, there is a weighing going on. So to me, this is showing up on the sky as a weighing as to some of the things that we have explored already. Is it the shadow or the mistakes or the extremes of old Scorpio, or is it an attempt to go through the scales with authentic new way of understanding Scorpio, which is not needing to rip anybody else's life force off, but just simply maximizing one's own connection to life force, and basically taking Scorpio to a revised understanding of it as a mystery, and that's what I think is happening with this movement of Jupiter.
And I love that, by the time of the summer solstice, Jupiter will have retrograded back to its stationing degree at 13 plus Scorpio, a degree that I love because it's Edward Snowden's moon, because we have his birth time because it's public record. And the Sabian is very witty, right? First think Edward Snowden, because the image for 13 plus Scorpio is telephone linemen at work installing links to other realities, the cosmic switchboard. We go, and a round of applause for Edward Snowden for his invaluable service. There you go, lad. And Jupiter will be transiting your moon. Neptune will be trining it. May there be an enhanced emotional receptivity for, the nobility of your contribution. There you go.
Around the other way, Caroline, I don't know whether you've noticed, one of the world's leading technocrats, Mr. Zuckerberg, it has Moon, Saturn, Mars conjunct in Scorpio. And it was as Jupiter was going over that complex that he faced his big challenge.
The whole realm. I want to tie, I'm cryptocurrency. I mean, everything into it. All of the whistleblowers also, on all sides of this, I mean, not Zuckerberg, as a nefarious user of private information, but Chelsea Manning, Moon and Scorpio, there's the good side of revealing what should be revealed, of revealing what's been hidden backstage, and then the challenging side of Zuckerberg.
It's just like what I was referring to is that Jupiter expanded his relationship to the Saturn a part of that chart, so that the secret's coming out. The shadow side of his own Scorpio moon was being exposed at that point.
Yes. So let's, so Jupiter and Scorpio on the scales. Yes, we like that. And going back to the stationing degree. And I find for everybody, just as an available inner dynamic, the Jupiter retrograde is not only reviewing and reflecting our species journey through time, but our own individual journey, and retrieving different chapters of our lives, journal bibliomancy, all the things each one of us have done, kind of surfacing hidden treasures, surfacing, but also hidden grievances where our heart might have been heavier than a feather and then Nom Nom would eat it. That also is being kind of dredged up to the surface, even on an individual level. You know, what do we not want to take with us any further, these grievances, you know, or people did me wrong, or we did them wrong, or whatever, and in some way to be pulled up, to be spicily blessed and wished well in some form. Because I think Jupiter says, I'm going to make everything bigger. So whatever you don't want bigger, let's throw it into Pluto's cauldron. So yes, addiction to having an enemy. That, I mean, I'm all for that experimental attempt. And then, you know, what you've been alluding to, the shadow that we want to honor, Jupiter trine Neptune, the faux glamour and the outsourcing of our leadership or autonomy to sociopathic dingbats who've lost a sense of kinship, or glamorous, guru teachers who are, here's the kind of vampiristic aspect, which is, you know, and the Trump thing too, the yearning followers who energetically bestow a kind of false glamour energy on the person who then feeds on that, and the followers think like, oh, look, he's glowing. It's like, that's because you're making him glow. So I would like everybody to kind of inhale back, you know, going, autonomy, a lucid drink of autonomy for everybody. There we go, to inhale back, because it's also, you know, it's part of the fake news conspiracy distraction machine. What you'd mentioned about social media, I think one of the points that Gary Lachman was making last week is that social media makes chaos magic possible. And I might want to rephrase the term, but Trump would not have been really possible, or the faux news memes, which are extraordinary, to be able to kind of swing things and get people hysterically distracted from, you know, fear that, when it's like, no, fear the other thing over there. So there is the Jupiter Neptune dynamic, but I want to toss it to you to, you know, for fellow rousingness, going, these generous guiding patterns are being proffered to us in our rogue species, and it behooves us to animate the desirable, lest we, because they're available to anybody, right? Lest we leave them by default to the Dementors. So this, you know, yearning for Jupiter Neptune, that, you know, to belong to something. I was, you know, thinking of when I met a great friend years ago. He was restoring a painting that had last hung in Hitler's dining room, and he was like, "Oh, I need help. I'm covering it up, you know, so I only have to look at 5 inches of it." And you know, I walked in and we began our friendship easily. I was calling for help, but it's a picture that the army had, right, in their vaults, right, and it's a picture last hung in Hitler's dining room of Hitler. You know, and all these, you know, kind of mob mind people around him going, gleaming, you know, glowing with, you know, fanaticism. Wah! And I love Jung's statement, fanaticism is always shouted down doubt, that people who are yelling, you know, they actually don't even believe it. Their own interesting con. But so Jupiter Neptune, are you feeling, I mean, there's a beautiful grand trine right now, right, of, you know, a possibility of sane, reverent common sense, the Cancerian planets, it's been Venus forming in Cancer, and something that has moved people appropriately is the completely outrageous cruelty of ripping children and babies away from their parents at the U.S. border. And it is moving a huge number of people, because it's so you know, counter to everything. You know, saying, you know, an 8-year-old blind boy ripped screaming from his weeping mother's arms. It's like, you know, and a lot of the women are worried, you know, that they will be deported without their children. So it's like the outrage into desire and into a deeper declaration, right? I mean, you're outside Metro Manila, but this is a huge story, isn't it?
Oh yeah. I mean, basically, in some respects, the awareness of international news is better here than you can often get in the United States. You can get much better news about Europe, about Africa, you know, and particularly about Asia. I don't know whether I want to take the conversation toward the local events here currently. I wondered if you wanted to me to bring Venus into the story.
Please. Yes, yes. You said, yeah, the new Venus cycle in November.
Yeah, I know, because you were one of the very first persons who picked up on that Venus synodic cycle material that I presented back in 1997.
Yes, I loved it.
And you picked up on the fact about how at various times in a century that there are going to be different archetypes of the feminine that are on the world stage, and that recently there's been ones that have been dominant and ones that have been left out. Well, it turns out that November 1st, November 2nd, right at that window, is when Venus rises as a morning star. Venus rises as a morning star every 584 days. And that establishes the primary imagery for the whole larger story. So we could say that for 584 days, beginning November 1st, 2nd, is a certain particular expression of the feminine in both men and women is going to be the dominant theme. Well, after 104 years of that morning star rise being in the sign of Scorpio, it's the first time in a long, long time that it's Libra.
Hmm.
So we're actually going to be having a Libran archetype at that portion of the seasonal calendar to be that what comes up as a morning star in the Venus cycle. So this is kind of an additional change coming up. And I think where we're going, where we are right now, Venus is now an evening star. It's coming up to the fourth chakra initiation. The current Venus cycle is a very different expression of the feminine. I mean, it's basically the Aries version, and it's about that warrior. You know, the sort of the morning star version of Venus was symbolic of the whole time period of women coming into the strong enough, clear enough ability to call out, the perpetrators, as it were, or everybody knows what I'm talking about here. But now Venus is in the evening sky, and what is being asked, I believe, of the feminine here as it approaches the junction point of Libra in November 1st, November 2nd, is to not have it fall into the biggest Aries trap, which is there's an enemy.
Right.
We're going to attack all men as being the problem, as being the perpetrators. I mean, we can maybe do that to a large part of patriarchy, but even patriarchy itself had elements in it that were still open-hearted. So the idea here would be, as we approach the next Venus cycle, that women don't black and white lump all men into the same category, and to be more open-hearted, which can happen in an evening star phase of Venus. The evening star phase of Venus is, we could say, an initiated phase of Venus. She's already been to the underworld. She's already done her grieving. She's already had to recognize the challenges of the journey. And this is the more, I hesitate to say, use the word enlightened, but it's a more it's a more mature phase, a more understanding phase, and certainly the mature or understanding phase of Aries is not to put everything into the great battle between light and dark.
Right. Well, that's the snookering into polarity, and really our challenge to be to spiral out of polarity in accordance with nature's guidance, out of conflict, and also not to be distracted. Mars. We want to get aroused and outraged and angry as the first part of the alchemy, and then change the anger and the arousal, necessary anger and arousal, into desire. So what do we want? So what would equality look like? So what's an example? So it's not just finger waggy, because that can easily turn into service to colonialism. And also, let us not be distracted from no isolated crises, all crisis of isolation. It's all one big story. What the Dementors are doing to the Earth, men plundering women, just the it's all, and I do like this part of Martine Prechtel talking about manners, not mismanners, but manners intrinsic to nature. Here comes the kind of Uranus and Taurus dynamic, and you know, Dancing with the Venus in Libra. You know, he says, and I like this part of animism, you know, was the oil invited to come out of the ground, for goodness sake? Was the oil invited to become plastic? Was the plastic invited to become a computer? You know, manners. And in that sense, the restoration of manners, how we approach the plant sacraments, how we approach things, you know, with informed, reverent curiosity, but that it is all one thing. And so obscene, right? I love obscene as a Greek stage direction, meaning off stage. The illumination of the obscene, of the Harvey Weinstein and the rape and harassment of, you know, that's good. Accountability coming up there. But it is emblematic, you know, of, you know, Exxon. I mean, just, you know, it is again the pillaging. And we do want to see the connection, and then, you know, everybody who brought what to this Renaissance being able to contribute to, you know, the magnetizing desirable story. You know, here's this bad thing. We discourage this, but we encourage this over here. There we go.
Yeah, one of the techniques we've been using in the school, Shamanic Astrology Mystery School, is recognizing both the archetypal masculine and feminine in all the signs and all the planets.
Right.
So Uranus, for example, could actually be, most people would say, oh, it's masculine.
No.
However, with Uranus now having moved into Taurus, I think the missing element, the most important element to bring in is that we could, if I coin a phrase here, the anima of Uranus moving into Taurus. And that could be, you know, Urania, Sophia. I mean, basically the different expressions of higher consciousness that are part of the archetypal feminine. And that happens through a connection with Taurus, with the earth, with intimacy is art, beauty and aesthetics, which requires a body. I mean, the pretension of Aquarius at its worst, we could say, the most extreme of it, is that we don't even need a body. You know, we'll just download consciousness into a computer chip and live forever. So if Uranus now is moving into Taurus, it's like, wait a minute, what about the earth? What about the archetypal meaning of Uranus with the feminine, the anima of Uranus, and I think that's the contribution here that comes from this transit.
Great, yes, and I do love that, you know, Uranus in Taurus, which is Venus's realm of intimacy and kinship, and retrograding back into Aries, Mars's realm, and I so love this beautiful astrological language for its proffering, because it does kind of say, let's park even men and women and masculine and feminine to one side and go. Everybody has Mars and Venus within their psyche in a unique arrangement. You know, everybody's got these dynamics, and, you know, in some kind of quality. And within us, we say, you know, Venus magnetizes, Mars animates, and together they spiral, you know, powerful beauty and well-wishing into the world. And so, yeah, so everybody's got a Venus Mars, and if anything, Uranus is certainly bisexual. But I also like that, you know, all the planets, all the language, all the myths, you know, yearn to be liberated and tricksterized and expressed in their kind of yang and yin qualities. But yeah, more room for everybody. Mm-hmm. And quirkily, what you're saying about the shadow of Aquarius, you know, is that, you know, it can get seduced by cool, detached image, right? The image thing, that it's, you know, it's the tyranny of image. And, you know, Americans are very partial to Aquarians. You know, Oprah, Howard Stern, Ronald Reagan. You know, it's flashy and kind of cool. It's very suited to media and TV, and it's kind of cool thing.
And anything having to do with technology.
Yes. But thank you so much, Daniel Gemario, and always to Erica Bridgman, board op at KPFA. And Daniel, just put out your website really fast.
ShamanicAstrology.com, and then my own, the JamarioApproach.com.
Excellent. May we cahoot in perpetuity. Thank you, team.